Grace to you and peace from God our Father and our risen Savior Jesus Christ. Good morning. Happy Easter. I would have brought my dog in again. I keep forgetting that it's Good Shepherd Sunday, and I forgot that Scout, the Australian Shepherd, would have been good to have around. And you all got to know her so well on Good Friday as she took over the place. But I didn't get to the dog today. It is Good Shepherd Sunday, and in the course of every Easter on the fourth Sunday, there is this great theme from John's Gospel, chapter 10. And it's a longer Gospel, and so every year we get a third of it, a chunk of it. Each year it's different in the three-year cycle of reading through all the Gospels. Today the theme of Good Shepherd, and it focuses largely on a different metaphor than shepherd, and it's really the language of gate and gatekeeper. And anyone who's taken any small group training or small group facilitators or any corporate kind of training for how to manage meetings is maybe familiar with that image of that term of gatekeeper. It's a specific role in small groups. And actually, teachers in school and in classrooms know about gatekeeping. They're gatekeepers themselves, really. Because a gatekeeper in a small group meeting has a specific job. It's to make sure that number of members of the group are all heard. Say, so some people are introverted, and they would say, well, we haven't heard from you in a while, Marge. What do you think about this? Or the gatekeeper's role is also to make sure that people are who are extroverted and who are very verbose would say, you know, okay, Liz, it's really time for you to back off a little bit. You know, it's because other people, because Marge hasn't had a chance to get her say yet. Sometimes there's also a chance to say, like I do at the Bible study at 6 a.m. At the spinning wheel every week, Tuesday morning, 6 a.m., you're all welcome. The eggs are always good. And we look at the gospel for the Sunday ahead, and we talk, and everyone shares their opinion in free-flowing conversation. And sometimes we talk over each other, surprise, surprise. And the gatekeeper has to say, you know, all right, Larry, Arden was talking, so let's go back to what Arden had to say there for a second. So we would have that conversation, wouldn't we? So my role largely is gatekeeper at that Bible study to make sure that everyone has a say, everyone's heard, people are protected in the conversation, and that people know their boundaries. That's a specific role in corporate speak, but it's a meaningful role and it's an appropriate metaphor. The agricultural image gate of the sheep in Jesus' day was fairly similar. It was to protect, have good boundaries, to make sure the sheep got in and got through and were taken care of. And the sheep, of course, would trust the gatekeeper because they knew the gatekeeper's voice. They knew the smell of a gatekeeper. They knew who their shepherd was. So they knew that that protection, that care, that boundary was going to be managed and honored. Today I'd like to speak specifically about the role of what it is to be in this modern era of ours, and to pay attention to the gatekeepers that we choose for ourselves. You know, when I go into restaurants anymore, there's a big conflict with servers and restaurateurs and patrons. It takes so much longer to get the orders done, and it's slowing down the restaurant business, because what do people do when they sit down at a restaurant? Do they look at the menu first? No, they look at their phone. I do. I don't know why. When I'm sitting down, I have the phone in front of me. Not a phone at all, you know. It's the world in my palm, and I'm looking at the world. So it's slowing things down. So having nothing to do with nothing, just remember when you go to a restaurant, keep your phone on and just put it away and talk to the people at your table. In our world today, we have so much information flooding us, it's hard to figure it out. You know, I get so many things about how to handle church life. 8 reasons you should do this in order to grow your church. 4 things you shouldn't do because it'll kill your church. 7 habits of successful people. 4 agreements. 4 spiritual laws. 12 steps. I mean, why are there not 8 spiritual laws? Why aren't there, you know, it's crazy. And everyone keeps telling and all the pastors share all their anxious little moments about why their church is declining or why it isn't growing because you're not using this kind of music, you're not doing that thing, or you don't say hello to people in the right way, or you don't have someone in the parking lot to park their cars for them, or you don't have, like, coffee holders in your pews, which I think is perfectly reasonable to do, you know. It doesn't stain the carpet, it's fine. So we think about it. You might stay awake, maybe, for this kind of a thing. All right. But nothing really works. My contention is, and you may have heard me say it before, that we live in Ansgar time. And Ansgar, St. Ansgar was a real person. He's the patron saint of Scandinavia. Have I mentioned Ansgar before? You know, I hope I haven't, because I'm getting older now, and repeating is a habit. But Ansgar was a Christian missionary who went to the Scandinavian nations in the pre-Christian era, and he brought the gospel there, and he worked there for decades. And he left a failure. He left without much success at all, and died outside of Scandinavia. And when decades later, missionaries went back, they found memorials and church organizations dedicated to St. Ansgar. But in his life, there was no outcome that he could judge as a success. His mission was a failure from any point of view measurable by metrics that the church likes to use to track itself. In a market-driven society like ours, or any society really, and yet St. Ansgar, abject failure. Ansgar time is like our time. You know, you do all these different things, and who knows what sticks and what happens with people. Why would they come? Why wouldn't they? I guess it all depends on what you're looking for. I mean, it reminds me of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego in the fiery furnace. They were going to get thrown in and burned up because they wouldn't obey and worship Nebuchadnezzar and the God of Nebuchadnezzar. And they said, well, God will save us, but if not, we will be faithful. And I think that, but if not, we will be faithful, is what you do in Ansgar time. It's what you do. It's who you are. It doesn't matter. You will be faithful. Right? So how do you develop the power of faithfulness in Ansgar time? How do you get up every day and do that? Well, one of the things is to think about gatekeeping. And your gatekeepers, what would happen to me if I spent all my time with my gatekeeper, that's my phone, and spend more time with the gatekeeper? Because I don't know about you, but my gatekeeper is whatever screen I'm looking at. Now, I don't care how small or big that screen is, but you've got a computer screen, you've got a connected screen, and you rely upon that screen as your gatekeeper to tell you what to think, what to believe, where you get your information from. Now, I make sure I pick my gatekeeper that accords to my bigotry and my prejudice in life. I make sure the information I get has been tailored to make me feel comfortable about my belief system. And those gatekeepers are they're making a lot of money on my bigotry and prejudice and yours, because they know what you want to hear and how you want to hear it. They've invested trillions to find out about you and me. And your gatekeeper is right there on that screen. You don't see it, doesn't have a name, but it's there, and it controls me. Now, I'm thinking what it's making me become is a rather bitter, angry, cynical man. And I don't like that about me. It has that ability. Now let's talk about the gatekeeper for a second. What would happen to me, what would I become as a man or a woman if I exchanged that gatekeeper and started to pray instead? Now, prayer is not Santa Claus. So I'm not asking that you start to pray for stuff and then keep a list to see which prayer came true. That would not be faith. That would be magical thinking. Prayer is not doing something so I can get something. That's a transaction. That's a mechanistic, equation-based religion. It's no religion at all. It's not spiritual. It's relatively small-minded. Openness is putting myself in the presence of the one I trust and experiencing that presence and practicing that presence of God. Imagine what I would become if I did that instead of the other. Imagine the power of the gatekeeper who does what? Who reminds me of my borders and my boundaries, the shape of my humanity, to love and to care and to serve and to sacrifice for others. Imagine if I was spent my time with a gatekeeper who would protect me, who would say, you're a person of dignity and worth, and people can respect you, and if they don't, you can ask for help to get that respect. The gatekeeper can say, you know, it's time for you to be quiet. I'm waiting for that moment to happen soon. What would happen to you if we traded gatekeepers? I think we'd be really better off. A little bit. Not that I get, you know, I get my illness fixed, which I would love to get fixed. Not that I get my children married off to wealthy people. Not that that's really a goal, but, you know, I'm a dad. You know, I have paltry goals sometimes for myself and my family. What would happen to us? It's kind of a no harm, no foul thing. Since it's AMSCAR time, you can't get what you want anyway. And maybe what you want isn't the right thing and it's the wrong target. Maybe we just get to experience the presence of something greater than us that's pure and holy and loving and good and kind and accepting and merciful and challenging, vibrant and abundant. Maybe we get more of that.